Hello and welcome to a very special bonus edition of the Seagull Eagle podcast, your go-to show for all things Palace, Brighton and everything in between. But today, it's all about Wembley. The big one, the FA Cup final. Crystal Palace versus Manchester City under the famous arch on Saturday, the 17th of May, 2025. And I am absolutely buzzing. Palace are back in the FA Cup final for the first time since that heartbreaker in 2016. And this time, it's Pep's blue machine standing in the way. Can Glasner's boys write their names in history? Can Eze, Sarr and Mateta pull off a shock to rewrite them history books? We'll be talking you through the road to Wembley, reliving some of the unforgettable moments, diving into both clubs' histories in the competition, and dreaming a little about what could possibly happen if Palace actually lift that cup and book a European tour. So whether you're a lifelong Eagle fan or a casual neutral or even a Brighton fan now, stick around because this is going to be fun.
How is this going to be fun? How have I managed to get onto this pod again?
Oh, here we go.
Is this in my contract?
I feel like it was actually your idea. I mean, it is in your contract. It's a very loose contract, but you agreed to be here through the good and the bad. It's some kind of weird marriage of podcast.
This is very much the bad. Let's just get on with it, shall we?
Okay, Neil, this is going to be fun. Well, look, I've got my tickets, Neil. This is the first thing to mention.
Okay, you've got your tickets.
I've got my tickets. I was number 1,350 in the queue. I was a keen cucumber, and I got there. And
keen cucumber?
It's a thing that I've just made up.
Really?
It's
cucumbers could be keen.
It's an enthusiastic cucumber. And yeah, we've made the decision for two reasons to change where we were sitting from the semi-final.
Oh, okay.
Reason number one was we were sat on level two because It was a big day out for us last time. And I decided to go, let's get the little bit better tickets and kind of have the big day out. And it was wonderful,
okay.
Right? So we got these lovely level two tickets and they were so posh that there was even a live musician before and during, you know, the halftime and all this kind of stuff. And it would, I think they were probably about, £100 a ticket, which for a semi-final was actually, I didn't think too bad in terms of the fact that the average tickets were around the £50-60 mark. So It was a little bit like, you know what I mean? Treat yourselves once in a lifetime, potentially, for my son.
Absolutely. Now, I understand that. And this time, because it's the final against Man City, you're thinking, probably not going to be such a good day, so I won't spend as much.
Mate, it's gone from £100 in the same seat to £235.
Wow. Really?
FA, what are you doing? It's an utter shambles. And even the entry-level tickets, the mid-level tickets and so on, they've all had about a 30 to 40% increase. And then the higher value tickets or the premium tickets have all over doubled in price. It's a genuine shame that they are, they're profiting out of the Palace fans who want to go. I guess, to be fair, they've got to make up the loss from them 5,000 Man City fans that didn't turn up for the semi-final, maybe. Anyway, so that was one of the reasons, was because to splurge the best part of £500-600 is just I can't personally justify that. And secondly, Harry wanted to be closer to the atmosphere. Whilst I was quite happy sitting watching from the higher point, we were above all of the flags waving and all that kind of stuff. My son wanted to be a bit more amongst it, so I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So I'm not sitting right in the middle of it or standing right in the middle of it, because that would be a bit much, but we're just to the left-hand side.
Nice.
Of that. So we're going to get a bit of a different view, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I bet you are, in all seriousness. What does your day look like as a whole? How's it going to work out for you?
We've planned it out to a T. Got an itinerary.
Yep.
So
sure you have.
9:45. Precisely. We've had a bit of an invitation from one of our neighbours, Neil.
All right.
So for those of you who don't know myself and Neil, Neil lives to the left-hand side of me.
And to the right-hand side of me, we've got some other neighbours who are lovely. And one of them's a big Palace fan who's had a recent injury. I won't give away their private medical details on this podcast. However, he can't walk very well at the moment. He's in like a cast thing.
Sounds like you have just given it away. Yeah,
yeah, and I think that, bless him, he's gutted that he can't come to the game. And so he's invited me and my son over for a Palace breakfast to start the day off.
Palace breakfast.
I don't know what that's going to mean.
I wonder what a Crystal Palace breakfast is. It like fried eagle? What is it? I wonder.
Maybe seagull. I don't know, mate.
Wow.
But I think that it's a lovely, lovely thing to do. And I think hopefully the start of a really special day. So me and Harry are really excited. We're going to go over there for breakfast. We're going to get on the road and hoping to get there for about 1 o'clock, 1:30-ish.
What time is the kickoff? Is it at 3 o'clock?
It's 4:30, I think.
4:30?
Yeah.
Blimey. Okay, so you're going to get there about 1:30. Okay, I'll get you.
So the plan is to get there about 1:30, and then we're going to do what we didn't do last time, which is we're going to try and find the fan zone. Right. We didn't walk around far enough last time, and we were that excited about going to Wembley, and Harry wanted to get in there and see it. Mm. When we went in there, we were actually the first ones in the stadium.
Well, in some respects, that's quite cool, because I always like the idea. I love going into an empty stadium. It's fantastic.
And, mate, it was quite a sight to behold, actually. But therefore, we then ended up working our way around all the food outlets and ate and drunk everything and all that beforehand. But okay, this time, I'm hoping to find the and get there with enough time to get into the fan zone beforehand, get our face painted, have a drink, get a flag and, you know, see the cheerleaders and meet the mascots and all that
Absolutely.
Kind of stuff. That's
soak
the plan.
Up, soak up the atmosphere. Get everything you can out of that day before the actual result.
Oh, honestly, it just...
Well, you invited me onto this pod.
Oh, I don't know if I did. So that's my plan for the day. How's it going to end up? We'll talk about that later. But I thought, seeing as we're, on the verge of history here for Crystal Palace, we should talk a little bit about history and just take a moment to celebrate the fact that there were 745 teams that entered this year's FA Cup. 745 down to 2 teams. That's a big, big achievement. Granted, most of them aren't, you know, they're in the lower level of football, but that's what makes this special, right? There's every eligible team in England have been entered into this cup and have tried to get to where we are now.
Oh, it is the reason they call it the magic of the cup.
Yeah.
It is world renowned, the FA Cup. It is prestige at its most highest. It is the oldest cup competition in the world. And it is a wondrous thing that this country can create a scenario where, as you rightly point out, 745 teams. Even I have played in the FA Cup at some point in my illustrious football career.
Sorry, what? You've played in the FA Cup?
Have you never played in the FA Cup?
I haven't, Neil. Most of the average people haven't.
No.
Sorry, this is news to me. Let's go into this a long time ago. Who for?
I played an FA Cup game in one of the very early qualifying games as you get through for a team just outside of Lewes called Ringmer.
Ringmer?
Yeah, it was a long time ago, but I can actually say that I played in the FA Cup. I didn't get to the final, Andy.
Did you win that game?
No.
Well, no, because we've been talking about the other one as well, weren't we?
Didn't even win that game either. But look,
mate, that's amazing.
But seriously, FA Cup-wise, I mean, it's a fantastic cup competition, and you can and should be proud to be one of the final two in that competition.
871 matches have been played so far in the competition, which is insane in itself, and 2,719 goals, averaging about 3 a game. So I think
you are a proper stato.
I love a stat. And Arsenal are the team that have lifted the cup the most times, for those of you who don't know, 14 wins, followed by Man United on 13. The only good news is that neither of them are going to win it this year.
Absolutely.
So, Crystal Palace's history in the FA Cup, for those of you who listen to the semi-final bonus pod, you'd know about this. So we don't want to kind of go over old ground again, but just to kind of remind everyone, we'll be competing in the final for the third time in the club's history, having never won the competition or anything of any distinction ever before, apart from the odd pre-season trophy or old Division One or whatever it would be. Now, Both times we've been in the final, we've come up against Manchester United.
Yeah, that's a bit tough, isn't it?
Yeah. Once in 1990 and again in 2016, which is more in my memory.
Well, you're not alone there. Obviously, Brighton's only time in the FA Cup final, they had to play Manchester United as well. So,
And we all know how that ended. I think, well, it's the same with us, right? So I think there is a good omen here, which is that we've got a different opponent, albeit from the same city, but a different opponent, different result. The team that played the last FA Cup final were actually led by Alan Pardew. What a legend. Mm. And the players that were on the pitch were players such as Zaha, Yannick Bolasie, who later went on to, I think, Everton, wasn't it?
Yannick Bolasie.
He was an absolute legend. I mean, imagine, we had Zaha and Bolasie.
He's what the kids call a baller, he was.
And this is what Palace have been known for over the years.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize, maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Had Kabayi. Do you remember Kabayi?
Yeah.
And our top scorer that season was Dwight Gayle. Man United, of course, ended up winning 2-1 after extra time. Jason Puncheon goal in the first half, and then Juan Mata levelled things out. And then we all got really excited, thought that potentially it was going to go to penalties, which is pretty much what everyone thought. And then Jesse Lingard broke our hearts just before then. So I think it was a hard one to take that. All the way back in 2016.
Well, yeah, but you've also got to remember you are playing Manchester City on the other side of the coin here when you talk about it was a hard pill to take. This time isn't going to be easy, mate. I mean, Manchester City, they've won the FA Cup 7 times. This is their, I think it's since that, it's their third successive year appearing in the final, I think. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. After being obviously beaten by Man United last year as well, don't forget. Yeah. So, I mean, they're no mugs, mate.
No, they aren't. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I think what I am trying to stress the point here, which is that them stats that you've just given me are of a team that was dominating football at that time.
Very true.
A manager that was seen as some kind of messiah who could do no wrong.
Yeah.
Whereas, granted, the wheels haven't fallen off. They did fall off. They found them again. But they're absolutely not in fifth gear going into this. They've had a couple of games where they've got some results. They've got a couple of draws. And I do believe they're beatable. I've said this before. And I think, look, level with you here, right? I know you're a Brighton fan. Look at this as just a cold, hard fact.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you rather play, Man City last year or Man City this year?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I know. Totally understand.
Do you know what I mean?
I totally understand your point. Absolutely.
So there we go. And also, everyone was saying the same thing about Villa, who were on form and all the other stuff. So anyway, let's see. I think it's a good point now to talk about how we actually got there, because I still can't believe that we have. It's still a little bit not quite right in my head.
Ooh.
So
are we gonna go back in time, flashback to the beginning of the season, and talk through the journey of Crystal Palace?
I think we should.
Can I make one of those little noise?
It's not Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh, is it not?
Okay. What are you talking about? Palace's journey, I think, probably the thing to mention here from the offset is that all the way from the beginning of this, it was really apparent that we had a manager who wanted to win this. And I identified that right from the start of this journey, which was he played the strongest teams, even when we were playing some of the smaller teams. So our third round was against Stockport County.
Right.
Eze scored the only goal. Fourth round was Doncaster Rovers at home. And we had Munez and Deveni scored as well, which was lovely to see our youth under 21 player kind of getting real. That was probably one of his first proper runouts this season, actually. And he managed to get on the score sheet late on there. In the fifth round, we beat Millwall, which was just wonderful to see. Loved that game. And obviously there was an own goal. We had Munez and Eddie Nketiah scored a rare goal for us actually this season and didn't get sent off or was offside 12 games in 12 times in a game. The big thing that did happen on that one though, I don't know if you remember this,
but this is
where Mateta nearly lost his ear.
Yes, the goalkeeper challenge. That was awful, wasn't it?
Oh, so bad. And it could only have ever happened in that game against Millwall, right? who are the only team really to rival you at being our rivals, is the truth of the matter. So yeah, bless him. He got stretched off in the game from the Millwall goalkeeper. But I think he only missed one game, two games or something.
Well,
mad.
I mean, he was never going to play many anyway because he was a sub keeper at the best anyway, wasn't he? So.
Sorry, I was talking about Mateta.
Oh,
he
sorry.
He missed one or two games.
Did he?
He ended up with his water polo mask on, didn't he? On his head. So.
A bit of a strange one. So who did they get in the next round then? Because that put them through to, what, the quarterfinals?
The quarterfinals. Then it was Fulham, which I don't think was an easy draw. Certainly not at that time.
Definitely not.
And we spanked them 3-0. Eze, Sarr and Nketiah again piping in here with a goal. And then, of course, we move on to the semi-finals, which was 3-0 against Villa. Eze and Sarr with a brace. So I think, yes, we had a reasonably easy start, but the latter, I think it ramped up in difficulty, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting, actually. I've just realised, looking at those scores when we're talking about them, so Palace have only conceded one goal in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it?
It's really good.
I mean, you know, actually, when you look at it just like that, like you've actually conceded one goal in the whole of the FA Cup so far and you're in the final.
We conceded one and I think scored 12.
Yeah, pretty good, isn't it?
That's not bad, is it? Now, one team who aren't going to be outdone by them stats of Man City, because I seem to recall quite a big cricket score in their first round. But Neil, do you know what Man City's journey was?
I do. And actually, it is practically like for like in some respects, because their first round, or well, third round, but their first game in the FA Cup was Salford City, League Two team.
Okay.
Which they won 8-0, if you remember.
As they should, to be fair.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. James McAtee hat-trick. I think Jeremy Doku got a couple as well. Fourth round, though, then they played Leighton Orient. I don't know if you remember, but it was at the Orient ground as well. And Jamie Donnelly from Leighton Orient got the first goal, which was like a halfway attempt and got it over the keeper. I mean, it's supposedly going down as a Stefan Ortega own goal, but let's be honest, it was a fantastic chip from, or long pass from Donnelly that took it over the goal. So, but they ran out winners 2-1.
So there was a potential upset there.
I'd be prepared. It was a close game, I suppose, is the point of that one.
It'd be great if they had got knocked out because we might be playing Leighton Orient in the final.
Fifth round, then they got drawn Plymouth Argyle. And they were lucky there, really, because that Plymouth Argyle were the team that beat Liverpool. So that could have been Man City Liverpool that round.
Which is still unbelievable. What a wonderful competition. Yeah. Plymouth Argyle beating Liverpool.
Quarterfinals, that took them to where they faced Bournemouth. They beat Bournemouth 2-1. Erling Haaland finally starting to get some FA Cup goals there as well. And then that took them on to the semi-final, which we all remember was the Nottingham Forest game, which, let's be honest, Nottingham Forest probably should have scored a 2 or 3. They hit the post about 700 times.
I think they were so unlucky.
They were. That game, I think, Man City had the ball, you know, but I think it was much closer than the 2-0 scoreline suggested.
Definitely.
And then obviously that took them through to the final. So if you look at it in the sense of the types of teams that they've played, both Palace and Man City have played around about the similar type of levels of teams to make them through.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think either of us had an easy route through. I think you're right. Three reasonably easy games and then two Premier League teams to get you through. So I think one thing that is apparent is I think Man City have come back from... When they have conceded goals, most of them have come back from behind. So that's one thing to think about when I'm jumping up and down Wembley on Saturday. and we've been there before this season, haven't we? Right, let's look at something that I never thought I would say, which is, what would happen if Palace actually won the FA Cup?
Well, this podcast would be finished, I'll tell you that.
Well, I guess the first thing that would happen is glory and bragging rights, as Neil's just alluded to. Yes, I would probably just be unbearable.
Oh, man. I don't even want to think about it yet. I'm in denial, mate. I'm in denial. Yeah.
Something that would be a massive, massive benefit, apart from obviously the celebrating and the tour, the open bus and all this kind of stuff, would be a European place, right? That's the bit that really excites me, because for me, playing in Europe has always been something that's out of reach. The big thing that the big teams do, but that we never get the chance to do.
In all seriousness, mate, I totally understand that. That's exactly how we Brighton fans felt. We couldn't believe that we managed to get to the Europa League two seasons ago. It was, and the journey itself was just fantastic. We were pinching ourselves every week, you know, as to what we'd done and how we'd got there. So I do understand that feeling and that excitement of the concept. And you're quite right. If you win the FA Cup, as we've been talking about week on week, as everyone I'm sure knows, that means that you get a place in the Europa League, and anyone finishing in the league, it doesn't matter where you finish, because there is no Europa League spot anymore because Palace have taken it.
Yeah, which would obviously be heartbreaking for Brighton if they get into that eighth spot. Now, it would actually be the first time that Palace would ever play in a proper European tournament. The only one we've ever played in before was something called the Intertoto Cup in 1998.
This time, if you do win, like you say, you'll be in a proper European tournament, in with the big boys, most of them anyway.
Absolutely. And it's not just about the prestige of playing in the Europa League. There's also other benefits too, right? The world doesn't, you know, just revolve around money, but it does, let's be honest. In terms of football, you need that kitty, especially when we're building our new main stand. And so on. So yeah, you get, I believe it's about 3.6 million that you get just for reaching the Europa League. And then it's like £350,000 for winning a game, 180 grand for drawing. It's that kind of level. So it all starts adding up.
Well, it does.
The further you get in.
It does, absolutely. I think Brighton, when they did their run, sorry to...
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Bring them into it, but when they did the Europa League run, I think they worked out that they earned something like 50 something million quid from it because of everything else that goes along with
it's
it. Match day receipts, sponsorship, television rights, all those. It's more games.
Yeah.
It's the reach as well. You get to reach more people, you know.
Of course.
So
how
more,
far did you guys get into it?
We got to the round of 16.
That's not bad.
That was pretty not.
Attempt.
No, we got to Roma and then we mucked it up in Roma and came back and almost brought it back, but not quite. But no, we did really well. And to be honest, yeah, we played Ajax, you know, we played Athens, we played some big teams, and it was just great fun, Andy. And me being a football fan, what I would say is, yes, it's great to be able to get to Europe, and it's something you can chase for. Obviously, I hope it doesn't happen because of I know what the consequences are for Brighton. But in a genuine moment, I do understand your excitement.
Mm. And of course, the other thing to consider here is that obviously it's the ability to attract new players
because
we would have to get a bigger squad. And most importantly, to be able to keep the ones we've got. Yeah, because as I said in the podcast this week, we've got, you know, all the big teams around Europe are getting their checkbooks out, thinking that we're easy pickings at the moment, and that we've got a price. And actually, maybe if we do get into this, there might not be a need for some of these players to move on, and we might be able to keep them entertained, and also the manager. Yeah. More to the point.
There's a few people swarming around him as well, isn't there? Look, let's talk about the actual game itself then, shall we? Let's take ourselves to Saturday.
Okay.
It's 4:30. It's just about to kick off.
Yeah.
Who are you expecting to see on that pitch?
I think it will probably be the same lineup that we had in the semi-finals and a very similar lineup we had at the weekend, actually. You've got
a couple of problems, haven't you? Or question marks, I think, at the moment, haven't you?
Well, I think only really Adam Wharton is the one that has obviously, he went over on his ankle. Mm. But again, as we said in the podcast this week, I don't think, we're guessing at the moment.
We don't think it's a problem.
But... We don't think it's a problem.
Okay. So if he wasn't playing, though, if he didn't start,
Will
Hughes, presumably?
Well, it's either Hughes or Lerma.
Right.
And I think, it'd be interesting to see which way that they go with that, whether they keep, because Will Hughes off the bench is a great option to kind of get stuck in and to kind of really own that midfield. Mm. Starting Will Hughes is always a risk, because I don't know about anyone else, Palace fans out there, but every time Will Hughes gets through a game without a red card, I'm celebrating, because he makes me nervous.
Yeah,
I love him to bits, but the yellow cards start flying.
Okay.
So I think it'd be interesting. The other option as well is that it's the Lerma or Kamada option, because he's gone for various different things. In the semi-finals, he started with Kamada. At the weekend, he started with Lerma.
I think it'll be Kamada. I think when the big games have come along, I mean, the Man City game that you played in the league, he had Kamada.
He did.
I think the semi-final, like you said, he Kamada. I think that's clear that that's probably who he's thinking, is that, you know, just above everybody else at the moment. He's made that tough decision. And he's, to be fair, Kamada's been excellent this season.
I disagree with
that. Oh, really? I think he's been really good. I mean, it's his first season, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think that the majority of Selhurst Park, for the majority of the games, up until about 3 or 4 weeks ago, would have quite happily got rid of our highest played player.
Really?
And replaced him from someone from the Sunday League. He's been that bad for the first three quarters of the season.
So why do you think Glasner stuck with him?
Because he knew that he had it in him, and he was a player that played with him in his last team that won the European Cups.
Won the Europa League,
And was incredibly successful, which is why they threw the checkbook at him and was like, come and join our team. He just hasn't had the intensity, and I don't believe the passion, to be part of that team up until he's really kind of found his form in this recent run of form. When we come back, when Palace were bad and we couldn't get a win for whatever we were doing, we just couldn't get a win, he was the scapegoat. So much so that there were groans going around the stadium when they saw him coming on. And I heard some horrible things in that stadium before he came on. So I'm really pleased he's turned it round now. And I do believe if he does start, he's earned that, because he was one of the best players on the pitch for the last 3 or 4 games that he's played, and even got one of the man of the match, I think.
It's really interesting you say all of that, because obviously I'm looking at it completely different perspective. Mm. And I look at it that he's a new player coming into a new league.
Mm.
He's playing for a manager that, they obviously have a good relationship. He understands what he needs, i.e. Kamada understands what his manager needs, because he's used to playing with him and things. And I've felt, watching him, that it isn't so much that Kamada had bad games, it's that the team didn't quite know how to play with him.
Yeah.
And I think over time what's happened is the team have got used to Kamada and they're now playing better altogether. But, you know, that's an outside view. I totally accept that fans will see things differently. But, yeah, from my point of view...
I think it's in his head as well, though, mate. I think that's the other thing, which is that it's a bit like the problems we've had with Eze this season as well, which is that when you get yourself into a bad run of form, you've got to find that mental space to be able to block out all the noise and just do your thing. And I think Kamada has come under such scrutiny on socials and everything that he's had his own little battle, but he's come out the other end. And honestly, it's Yeah, I think there was, when I was at Selhurst Park last weekend, it was, I think people were trying to remind themselves that we actually liked him now. It was one of them, do you know what I mean, around yeah. me. So, yeah, I don't mind who starts. I believe in the manager, whatever he picks.
On a Man City side of things,
yeah.
when we talk about starting lineups and all that sort of thing, I mean, I can't ever second guess Pep, but I think, you know, obviously you looked at this weekend's games, Erling Haaland turned up.
Did he?
Well, he was on the pitch, you know what I mean? But at least my point being, he's clearly fit and up and running now, at least from that point of view. I think there'll be a question mark whether maybe Kevin De Bruyne starts as well, or it being probably his last big game for Manchester
City. Do you not
think
he's going to start him?
I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure. I think, you know, Haaland being back is a good thing for Manchester City, obviously. And I think... it all comes... There's many tactics that could happen.
Yeah.
I think it would make sense that De Bruyne would start. I think in my head it makes sense. I just always wonder with Pep, when it comes down to the big pressure moments, he has a tendency sometimes to tinker a little bit too much and come up with some strange plan. And that's my only sort of worry about it. Anyway, we'll get to tactics in a minute. But yeah, I think... with Man City, I think the one thing is Haaland's back, so that's good news for them. And hey, look, he's a big player for anyone in any side.
Yeah.
And I think it will formulate, therefore, a way of playing for them. There's a lot of players vying for those midfield spots for Man City, but ultimately, I don't think it really matters who ends up on the pitch. I think it's all about the performance level for them.
Yeah, I agree. So, the big question... is what are our chances of actually winning this? Well,
are you asking me or are you telling me?
I'm asking the world, really.
Right.
Because okay. the official stats, right? You know, like they do the ELO
like stats. Probability chance.
Yeah.
Right.
So obviously there's very clever computers that kind of work out all the previous games, previous meetings, or you know, stats in terms of squad, all that kind of stuff. Put it all into one thing. And they're suggesting that Palace have only got a 13% chance of winning. Wow. And that the most probable score is a 2-0 win for City.
So in a two-horse race, you've got a 13% chance of winning?
That's what the ELO stats are saying, yeah. And I think that they're taking into account not the same Man City that are turning up on that day. That's what I think.
I think that's a fair point. I really do. I think you're absolutely right.
I don't think it's like we've got a 13% chance of not winning. I think it's a lot more even than that, though. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking more like it should be maybe 60-40 against or whatever it would be.
No,
but yeah.
So when it comes down to it then, what are the main things that you're thinking will be the decider in this game?
Well, the first thing for me, we're the underdogs.
Yep.
And I love that.
Yep, I understand that.
I love the underdog theory. The whole kind of got something to prove, something to play for, that bit in history that we're trying to do something we've never done. You know, that whole Wigan thing when Wigan won it.
Yeah, yeah. Who did they play in the final?
I can't remember, mate. Got no idea.
Manchester City.
Did they? See, it's doable.
Yeah.
So I think we talked about what happened at the end of the semi-final and the how the players reacted to that win and how much it meant to them. And you could see whilst they're on the pitch that, you know, the defenders are getting in the way of that ball, life or death style, right? That the keeper is going for everything. Mm. Doesn't matter if he's going to get trampled on, kicked, whatever it would be, he's there. I think there's a level of want and desire to achieve something great this year. And this is the only team that we've had that I believe could actually do that. Mm. There is a togetherness. There really is a togetherness and a sense of kind of they are one unit, they're all going towards the same direction, they're a nice group of people who enjoy playing together with a manager who's got a really clear identity and a good picture of what everyone needs to do and how they're going to do it. It just feels like now is the time. So I think it will come down to the momentum continuing and them keeping their heads with it. I think from a Man City point of view, what's their motivation to win this? Well, they need to win it to salvage their season in terms of their reputation and not going away with nothing. And it's Kevin De Bruyne's last chance at some kind of trophy with Man City. And he's already done us enough damage this year. So I think them things, in terms of who wants it more, I actually believe that Palace want it more. I really do. I think that the motivation for Man City, which is we can't not win it, is not as big as Palace's we're going to create history thing. I think that's the motivation. And in terms of our running to this final, I think it's the perfect running for us right now. We've had a couple of good games, just like we did with the semi-final, and we've got the momentum. I do think the biggest thing with all of this, though, is going to be the tactics, because we got the tactics right for the first half of the game when we played them last. We then got a third goal disallowed. I don't know if you remember the podcast that we did last time, but I was explaining, I was jumping up and down on my sofa as they scored the third goal, 3-0 up against Man City. It then got disallowed. All of a sudden, the whole shift of the game changed. And Man City looked like a team again with the click of a finger. And there was a few reasons for that, but and I think, you know, you're the tactician here, aren't you? Can you have you got any insight into what Palace might need to do?
I think when we look at tactics, I would say it's actually not necessarily what Palace need to do. When I look at Palace at the moment, that they are really purring at the moment. They're really finely tuned, and their plan A works really well. So at the moment, on paper, I would say I'm not expecting to see any major tactical changes from Glasner to start with in the game. What I would say is when it comes to Pep and Man City, I do have a couple of question marks around what they're going to do. With Crystal Palace, as you've spoke about every single week, the power comes from the wing backs. From those guys getting up and down the wing. And in the semi-final for Manchester City, they played Nottingham Forest, obviously. And I would say there are similarities with how Nottingham Forest and Crystal Palace play. Their style, their formation, lots of things that they...
Lots of similarities. Yeah.
Exactly. And Pep did something different in the semi-final against Nottingham Forest. We're in an age now where fullbacks are some of the best players on a pitch. I can't believe I'm saying that, especially as an old left back. I was definitely never the best player on the pitch. But now we're in an era where fullbacks are so important. Normally Manchester City, as you probably remember, they sort of, Pep invented what we call a false back, where fullbacks come into midfield and create like a defensive midfield. And against Nottingham Forest, he changed that. And he actually went old-fashioned and let his fullbacks stay out wide to try and nullify Nottingham Forest's wingbacks. And it worked. You know, not all the time, but it worked. It stopped it a little bit, kept the width, and stopped Nottingham Forest from taking on too much around the sides of Manchester City. And if you think back to the game at the Etihad, where you alluded to earlier, where Crystal Palace took the lead, they were 2-0 up. And then suddenly something changed. There was not huge amounts of tactical change, but there were some subtle ones for Manchester City. One of which was O'Reilly. Is it Nico O'Reilly, the young kiddie who was playing left back at the time for Manchester City? In that first half an hour, was coming into midfield and joining midfield, but suddenly he started staying a bit further wide. So Pep looked at that then and changed a little bit. And we know what happened in that game. And the Nottingham Forest game, he did the same thing, as I said. So I think there's something there around... That's the first thing I would look at. That first 5-10 minutes, see where the fullbacks, when they've got the ball, when they haven't got the ball, where they're going with it. Because I think that will be key then to what Glasner does to try and work that out one way or the other. And it will be interesting to see what they do. That's the tactic side of it. I think the fullbacks are key for both teams. And then lastly, from me, I think the other thing to consider, and it's a really old-fashioned cliche, but I think it really matters in this game, is I think the first goal wins it.
And what really?
It's the only goal. Think whoever scores first, I think will end up being, it'll be vital. And the reason I say that is if you look at some of the statistics, I think just from a purely football perspective, Man City, you're quite right, not having the greatest time. But I think if they score first, I think that will give them even more confidence. And their team that will want the ball and keep the ball. And it will be difficult to get the ball off them. Second of all, though, Palace. Very much like Nottingham Forest. This season, if you look at the way that they've played, they have played 16 games where they have conceded the first goal. Do you know how many times they've won when they've conceded the first goal out of 16? Once. I think that's really key to any counter-attacking tactics. Get ahead and then wait and set your traps. And I think that's going to be the key thing. For me, anyway, as an outsider, I think that first goal will be absolutely the absolute decider.
The only thing that I would counter that with, Neil, is that let's not forget, we were all over them and we really were in that game. We were 2-0 up. We scored the third. It got disallowed. Yet we still lost the game 5-2. And I feel like the Man City way is it don't matter if you go 2-0 down, it don't matter if you go 3-0 down, you're still not comfortable. And if we go 2-0 up at Wembley, God forbid, we go 2-0 up at Wembley, I will still be sat there thinking we're going to lose 3-2.
No, I totally get your point.
I think if they score first, I'm not very happy about that situation and will struggle to mentally find a way. And I think that the players potentially will as well. But I will never be comfortable with a lead on Man City until that final whistle is blown.
Do I dare say, Andy, there is a scenario that plays out here where this game...
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
It could go to penalties, mate. How would you feel if this game goes to penalties? I mean, first of all, it's great because you've managed to not lose, but I don't think I'd be able to take that personally as a fan sitting at Wembley and your team's going to go through a penalty shootout for an FA Cup final.
I genuinely do not know how I would be able to cope with that. I have enough trouble with the England games in, do you know what I mean, watching it on the telly.
Yeah.
I've never had that level of kind of my actual, you know, club team with any level of success that's been worthy of that level of stress.
Well, look, let's hope it doesn't get to that in all seriousness, because actually I hate the idea of a penalty shootout. I'd much rather a game finish in 90 minutes one way or the other.
So. I love it from a neutral point of view.
Oh, yeah, but when you've got a dog in the game, it's...
I really don't think it will, though. I think there's too many opportunities for goals in this game.
So do you have a prediction for this game, then?
I do. Try and keep a straight face.
Go on.
I think we're going to win it 3-1.
3-1.
And do you know why? Because we haven't been shy on scoring the goals. I think if we can get at them early and not stop getting at them, that's the thing, right? That was the change in the last game that we played. We changed our tactics and we gave them the game. We took off Mateta and we brought on a midfielder, I think it was Hughes, and changed the formation and allowed them back into the game because we tried to win the midfield battle. We stopped attacking, if that makes sense.
Well, as your manager alluded to, you said that he had a few words for Pep, didn't he, last time?
Oh, he said to him on the touchline at the end of the game, they did their polite handshake. He did his fake smile to Pep and went, well done. And he whispered in his ear and he said, you won't get me again next time, knowing damn well that they'd be meeting them in the final. I do genuinely believe that. So, I think it's going to be 3-1. Okay. I think we're going to create quite a game. And I'm really hoping that is one that is going to be talked about in a positive way for years and years to come. And I can say, and my son can say, that we were there to see it. So as we count down the hours to kick off, there's something magical in the air. It's not just another game. It's the game. A chance for Crystal Palace to make history. To turn decades of heartache, passion and pride into actual silverware. The odds say one thing, but football... Well, football's a funny old game. Whether you're draped in red and blue on Wembley Way or shouting at the telly at home, we'll all play a part in this memorable day. So thanks for joining us on this special Seagull Eagle journey. And who knows, next time we speak, we could be FA Cup winners and planning a victory parade. Good luck, Palace, and we'll see you next time on Seagull Eagle Podcast.